and over two-thirds of the general population support a national health care plan. Let's talk. Visit Healthcare for All Texas at www.hcfat.org.
KPFT, Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT, Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Edition of Technology Bites here on 90.1 FM, KPFT, Houston.
Happy radio show to us. Happy radio show to us. there. Go ahead and bring up line one. Wow, that's a nice sound. That was awesome. I don't know what that was. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And I'm the cause of all that static.
Are you? What was it?
It's the mic.
The mic?
Yeah, it's all funky.
All right, turn them off.
Funky.
Man, it's air conditioned in here, but it's so hot in Houston right now that, you know, no matter air conditioning seems to be able to fend it off.
How hot is it, Jay?
I don't have one of those jokes prepared. Damn. Well, my dog Spot, he's now a puddle. All right, so that was really lame. Thank you. I'll be here for the next 2 hours.
Try the fish, but it'll probably kill you.
All right, visit us online at geekradio.com. That's our website. You can also follow Dwight Silverman on Twitter at @dsilverman. And he just loves. Are you doing it again?
It's the sound of the ocean.
It's an early digital representation of waves.
I feel very calm.
Wait until you hear the digital seagulls.
I just want to let Flicted make sound effects all night.
That's pretty messed up.
That is really messed up. It's just the microphone when you turn it up?
Mm-hmm.
That's very strange. Trade places with Dwight if you like.
Did you clean it with your Howard Hughes cleaning rag?
No, I did not.
It just brings up all kinds of images.
Is it better?
My head.
I can't hear you.
There you go.
That's
it's working now.
If by that definition you mean, is it better? So, Wow. It's just like a regular technology bike show or having technological issues.
What happened to Peter?
He's still there.
I'm here.
He's there. Did you have a question for him?
No, he's just been very quiet. I was scared he dropped off.
We're waiting for you to get your act together. You and Groove House. All right. He's giving me the hair.
Now it's our act.
Yeah, nobody can hear you now.
We're getting our act together.
Yeah, I'm collecting, I'm focusing, little no J time.
Afflicted show.
That was just in time for you to say the Afflicted show.
Geekradio.com, IRC on irc.cuckoo.com, and pound text bytes. You can go to the website and use the Java client to join the IRC if you don't want to mess with your own client. You can also send questions, comments, and concerns via the comment section on the website. And the phone number, a little bit later on, you'll be asked to dial that. We have no guest tonight, so it's a regular old everyday show. 713-526-5738. We'll be opening up the lines here in a little bit. We have Jamie's in the studio with us tonight. We have a guest. Somebody's hanging around. It's not an interview guy. Oh, we should interview her.
Yeah, we could do a practice interview.
Yeah, we'll just pretend like we're interviewing you for a job.
No problem.
No problem.
What would you say is your worst failure, and how did you respond?
Apparently showing up tonight. I'm so hot and miserable in here. This is not pleasant. My head's sweating.
Really?
Somebody fan me. Thanks, Barry.
That's all I got.
Yeah, that's not much. All right, so we're going to... So how are things in San Antonio? How's the weather in San Antonio, Pete?
Similar to Houston, where it... it's cooled off into the upper 90s the past couple days.
Yeah, I think they were getting hundreds before we did. So they've actually... San Antonio and Austin have had a little bit hotter time of it than we.
I'm going to be making the trek to West Texas out towards El Paso next week. And I understand that it's actually cooler there than it is here.
I'm sure it will be right up until you pass over a line between San Antonio and Houston, and then it'll flip. That's what Murphy's Law says.
Yeah, so all the Houston will have an unseasonably cool week. That would just... I mean, I really dug the rain. We got some rain the other day. I was sat outside and watched it rain for 30 minutes. So my grass is less brown than it was before. It's all dying. It's all just wilting away. All right, so San Antonio is hot and unpleasant, but you didn't have to make that multi-hour trek to Houston, so you're in the air-conditioned house. That's good.
That's true.
And... Are you coming into the studio next week, or?
That's what I'm planning. I'm going to try and get a machine that can be the Skype box for me, and come in and see if I can get that hooked up next week.
That'd be cool. So we'd have Pete on Skype.
Yeah, and then it'll be just like an extra mic instead of taking up a phone line. And I'm hoping I'll be able to hear callers, because it's really that's very difficult.
Right. That would be really good if you could actually not have it be where, you know, we have to mediate between Pete and the caller and get one to be quiet. Cause, yeah, you seem to have a trouble when you're on the phone hearing the callers, or them hearing you as well.
Yeah, so that way that gets me off of that and just act like an extra mic. So
that'd be cool. All right, well, let's play the theme music and go to San Antonio for reals and have Technology Bytes Info Shot with Peter Hughes.
It's the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
This one's a good one. Engadget reports a survey hosted by Best Buy Mobile shows that half of people don't understand their smartphone, with 47% saying the things confuse the heck out of them, while 60% of those aged 35 to 49 feel that people with smartphones spend too much time working and not enough time playing Wii Sports Bowling. Those feelings of confusion and ire doesn't stop a sizable segment of the rest of the 1,000 people surveyed from wanting a smartphone, with most desiring access to the sort of apps you can't get on dumb phones, and 14% of women saying that playing games was very important. Only 9% of men said the same, or should I say admitted the same. Sadly, there was no figure indicating how many people enjoy paying too much for text messages and signing their lives away on lengthy contracts. So it's pretty cool that half the people don't understand smartphones, but they still want them. And here's one in the knock me over with a feather surprise category. PsyStar is apparently set to emerge from Chapter 11 bankruptcy, and it seems that they are planning on getting right back into their previous routine with a new hardware offering to boot. In an email newsletter that went out to their subscribers today, the company states that the Chapter 11 protection was, quote, critical to their daily operations, and that they are now ready to emerge and again battle Goliath. More information is expected to be available in the coming days when they are formally discharged by the bankruptcy court. Along with that announcement, the newsletter also introduces PsyStar's newest hardware offering, the Open 7, which brings together OS X and Intel Nehalem Xeon technology in what they are calling their fastest and most quiet computing configuration. In addition, they're stating that all new systems will feature a new bootloader called the Darwin Universal Bootloader, Double, D-U-B-L, and mentioned plans of an open-source release in the near future. The email was wrapped up with a simple anecdote: when life gives you apples, make applesauce. Of course, it's hard to tell. Were they referring to the fruit or the company? So there's an interesting one. Of course, we'll believe it when we see it when they're shipping new stuff. But this universal bootloader, if it does similarly to, for instance, the bootloader that lets people put Hackintosh, the Dell Mini 9s and stuff, then that would blow wide open the kind of the Hackintoshing community, I think, because it makes it a lot simpler and you can buy the disk and install it right from your own disk. Some of you may not know this, a lot of you probably do. Firefox 3.5 is all packaged up and ready for public consumption. Mozilla is saying its new browser is more than 2 times faster than Firefox 3. But what's got Engadget more excited is the support for plug-in-free open codec video and audio playback using Ogg Vorbis and Ogg Theora. It's still in its infancy, but the subtle glimpse they've seen so far of a world without flash video reducing their CPU to jelly is rather compelling. So it means you can use an application that's more built to handle playing the video stuff and not tax your browser with all that. So definitely it is not a mistake to download and use Firefox 3.5. I've not heard anybody say anything that that would cause one to question the wisdom of doing that. So definitely check that one out. This one's another interesting one. We haven't heard much about the PS3 Slim since E3, but that doesn't mean it's been entirely quiet out there. The hot rumor today is that Sony's signed manufacturing agreements with both Foxconn and Pegatron. No, those are not characters in the latest Transformers movie. They're actually manufacturers in Asia, to build the revised model in time for July delivery. That much we believe, since it's been backed up by a couple different credible reports. But here's where it gets totally insane, according to, again, Engadget. There's a suggestion that the Slim will be the last PS3 model of this generation, and that a next-gen console based on Sony's motion controller is due in spring 2010. We don't buy that at all, since PS3 is just entering its prime, and Sony was clear that the motion controller was for the existing console. So the thought is that the rumor is getting garbled down the wire, that it's more likely that the Slim is being prepped for an August launch to coincide with rumored price cuts, and that new PS3 bundles that include the motion controller are set to drop next year. So we'll just keep an eye and see how garbled this was, or what the real story was or is, and so on. And finally, in new gear stuff, this one's rumory, but it's still new gear. NVIDIA obviously isn't doing much talking about this platform itself just yet. But Fudzilla apparently has it on good authority that the company is indeed already hard at work on Ion 2, which promises to bring with it plenty of improvements over the already impressive Ion chipset. Chief among those is a decreased die size, much faster graphics, and more than twice the shaders of the original GeForce 9400M chipset that the current Ion is based on, which uses 16 shaders. Not many more details than that, unfortunately, but NVIDIA is supposedly looking to launch Ion 2 by the end of this year, although not before it sells plenty more Ion 1s. That's that little mini platform that has much better video for netbooks and so on. And, yeah, it's summer, so that's a short one leading into the 4th of July, but that's also the news.
4th of July news. Speaking of 4th of July and holiday weekend, I just want to let everybody know that there will not be a Geek Gathering this month because... Well, a holiday weekend.
Aww.
Well, we'll do one next month.
Actually, there are going to be geek gatherings all over the place on Saturday night. Everywhere you see fireworks is another little geek gathering.
Another little geek gathering.
At so least you can pretend that.
People will be taking out their gadgets and showing them off. Is that what you're saying?
They'll be blowing stuff up real good, which is also geeky.
The Dell battery recall celebration.
Oh, and speaking of gadgets, I want to talk about this site that I have been raving about today. There's a new website. If you're a gadget fan, you've got to check this out. It's called, I'm not quite sure how you pronounce it. I think they're calling it Gadget, but it's spelled Gidget, GDGT.com, and it's from... The two co-founders of Engadget and Gizmodo have gotten together and created a social network playground for gadget fanboys. you sign up, you in your profile you list the gadgets you own, the gadgets you want, and the gadgets you had. And they have a database of all these gadgets, and people can submit their own items to the database and grow the database.
It's a pickpocket burglar shopping list.
Absolutely. and you're not invited to put your home address in there, but think about that as you list your inventory. But it's a very cool site, and it has a lot of potential to be some serious geek crack.
And just to be fun on it, whenever you post anything... Don't use any vowels, just like in their name.
Right.
Yeah, it'll be a new Gidget speak.
Gidget. But when they launched it today, it immediately crashed from the crush of people trying to get to it.
So you know it's got to be good.
Right. And now it's working fine. So, if you go in there, I'm on there as D. Silverman. You can follow people like you can on Twitter and hop on there and follow me and let's compare gear.
Hop on and follow.
That's right.
So you're
I like it. I'm really enthused by it. I can see myself spending a lot of time there. Maybe getting fired. Who knows?
Get on there and just only post like Casio digital watch.
It has you can post what you had. So I do want to go back and I had one of the really early Commodore calculators. It was about the size of a paperback book. And I want to find that.
You can start a Newton SIG, Pete.
Yep.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep.
Actually, I had, what was it, in the very early 80s, there was a portable game system that was LED. The screen was grayscale. It was really two shade. There was no, it was black or not. And the games were like the whole faceplate of the thing slid on, and I need to find out what the name of that puppy was because nobody had one. I don't know where my parents found that thing, but it had Breakout and some sort of Star Trek game on it. And because I was trying to, when you said you could have stuff that you used to have, I tried to think of the most obscure and odd gadgets that I had ever possessed to try and. To put in there, and I'm sure that's what a lot of people are going to do.
Yeah, it's going to be curious to see what's considered to be old when people post, I remember having an iPhone 3G. All right, 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you'd like to be on the air. 713-526-KPFT. Looks like we have one call in the queue, but all the other lines are opened up. So if you want to get on the air, this is your opportunity. Groove House, who do we have?
First, we've got John.
John, you're on the air.
Thanks a lot, guys. Two quick questions, and I don't know if it's virus-related or not. I have a Toshiba laptop about 3 years old. It won't let me go back in and set a restore date. And then sometimes when I go do a Google search and I'll click on a website, it directs me to a commercial website.
Spyware.
Okay.
Have you ever heard us talk about spyware on this show?
Yeah, in fact, I went to your website and worked on trying to download something, and maybe I wasn't very successful at doing it, but I'll give it another shot.
Well, I would at least go to geekradio.com and click on the spyware link and see if you can manage to download and install Malwarebytes.
Okay.
Because what you probably got is some piece of software that's hijacking your web browsing and trying to direct you to these commercial sites instead of letting you just browse the web as you care to. And that's
right.
also possibly what's affecting your ability to set a system restore point. And even if you do get to where you can set a system restore point, you might want to consider disabling system restore, rebooting and re-enabling system restore just to kind of start that over again. That might fix that system restore problem, but if you're getting your web browser traffic redirected, you've probably got a spyware issue. Do you have antivirus software installed on your computer?
And I've had this laptop for 3 years, and this is the only problem I've had with it. So but I've got McAfee.
Okay, well, good. At least you're running antivirus. Now, that doesn't always catch the spyware, but want to make sure that you're not also possibly fighting a virus issue as well. But see if you can go to geekradio.com and click on I explain how to get the free version of Malwarebytes right on that page. So you download that software. Now, some spyware will prevent you from getting to the site that lets you download the anti-spyware tool.
Okay.
Because it's smart like that or mean like that. It says
right.
It knows the primary sites that where you can download free anti-spyware software, and they will block that access. So you may have to download the program onto another computer, put it on a flash drive, or burn it to a CD, and then bring it over to this computer and install it.
Okay, I may have to do that because I thought I had tried to. I'd visited your website and tried that. I'll give it another shot, and then if not, I'll do what you just suggested.
All right, good luck.
Hey, appreciate it, guys. Y'all do a good job.
Thank you, John. Have a good night.
The other thing to think about, though, with that recovery thing is if you turn it off and turn it back on, what the first thing it'll do
is
set a restore point. It could grab the spyware and bring it into the restore point.
That's true.
So you don't want to do that if
until you get it clean.
Until you get it clean, right.
Good point, Dwight. All right, 713-526-5738. Who's up next, Groove House?
Up next.
Wow.
Wow. Up next, we've got Larry.
Larry, you're on the air.
Hey, guys, I really enjoy the show, and every now and then I send y'all a couple of greenbacks because y'all say if people send you money, you'll quit talking. But anyway, I need to find out if there is software available to convert from English to other foreign languages that you could recommend.
If there's software that'll do what with foreign languages?
Need to convert English documents into Chinese, Russian, Japanese.
There are some programs that are designed to do that, but it's going to be, the literal word for word translations from one language to another don't really work that well. But let me see if I can find the name of that software. I think it's called Word Magic. There's a particular piece of software that's designed. Yeah, English. It's called Word Magic.
Word Magic.
And they have different programs that are designed specifically for different languages, and it's designed to translate documents from one language to another.
Yeah, that's what I need.
So it's You know, none of that, nothing that will do this is free unless you want to plug it into translate.google.com and hope for the best. But that's going to, you know, if you ever translate something using translate.google.com and send that to somebody who speaks that language natively, they'll just get a little ill when they read it.
Yeah, no, this is something I'm gonna use in my business, so I have to.
Well they have English.
Spend a little money.
They have English to Spanish. I'm sure they've got a. I think they got to have other languages. Let me see.
Well, they have a bunch of them.
Products.
But you know the thing is that nothing beats human translation, and if this has to do with your business,
you may want to get
pony up the bucks and get your documents professionally translated by someone who knows what they're doing.
Yeah, I was just looking at trying to save some costs if I can, because if I have to hire people, I'm going to have to hire like 12 people.
Well, I mean, like Dwight said, it really depends on what you're delivering and what level you want it to, how well you want it translated. There's just not a piece of software out there that can, you know. One thing I know from my experience in having to use translators, digital translators like translate.google.com, it's how you phrase it in English that's going to determine how well the translator works. So if you have poor English grammar, or you do not construct your sentences well, or use the proper language when you're constructing the original document, the translator's got to even do a worse job of translating what you're doing.
Yeah, most of what I'm going to be doing is technical data for chemicals.
Okay. Well, I would take a look at Word Magic and see, and then that's the only one that I'm familiar with.
All right, appreciate the help.
There's a site called freeling.net. It's a bunch of people that hang out and do technical translations and do stuff like that. It's kind of a free open source community, but if you need a lot of work done, some of them do freelance stuff. But if it's chemical stuff, they'd probably give you a hand.
All right, appreciate the help.
All right, thanks for your call.
Bye.
What the heck?
I think he was at a carnival.
Yeah.
He was calling. It was a little slow at the ring toss booth tonight.
He's a carny.
Step right up, kids.
Step right up. Get your computer questions answered here.
I'm just imagining that software trying to do translations to other languages of like chemical data.
And what if it got like an L? It got
it's
something
be horrible.
Well, I would imagine that like some of the terms in that are not going to have a translation. So it's going.
Or
to
if
be
they do, it's so specific to that field that a normal translating system isn't going to have those words
right
in it at all. Anyway, even though they may exist.
You know, like I was noticing when I was in Spain, that a lot of computer technology, there's no translation. There's no Spanish equivalent. You know, when you hear somebody start talking tech, and it's peppered with English.
Good for us, though.
Oh, it's great for us. Because Cynthia speaks really fluent Spanish, and we met up with this guy I met via Flickr and Twitter when we were in Spain, and she was having to do all the translating until he started talking about Parallels and Macintosh and stuff like that. So then I was translating Geek to English for Cynthia so she could understand
this.
The
crap. Yeah. Let me take it from here.
I got this. Yeah. So that's, like what Barrett said, you could run, Inflicted said, you might run into problems with technical translations. But if you want to have fun, speaking of translations, fun with translators is take some English document and go to translate.google.com and cut and paste that document, the text of that document, into the translator and translate it from English to, say, French, and then translate that from French to German, and then take that and translate it back to English, and then read it. It's really good to do with stuff, like especially like classic literature or some well-known story where you get the gist of what they're trying to, of what it really once was, but it morphs it into something that's really quite
humorous.
There's
a free app for that on the G phone.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's called Retranslate or something like that, but it sends it back and it chunks it out to whatever language you want, and then it reads it back in just to see how much of a disparity gets introduced. It's pretty disturbing sometimes.
The woman who cleans our house is from El Salvador, speaks very little English, and I'll often use Google Translate or the old AltaVista Translate, which used to be pretty good. And I'll type something up and give it to her, and she always just starts smirking. It's like, okay.
Well, what's funny is if you take something in English through Google Translate and translate it to Spanish or French or whatever, and translate it immediately back, it comes back perfect. I actually noticed somebody sent us one of my users had gotten an email from somebody in French, from one of our French customers, or from a customer in French Canada, and she said, well, I can't read this. What do I do? Do we have any translation software? I said, well, really, the only thing you can do is try putting it into Google Translate and see if you can get the gist of what they're saying. We put it into Google Translate, translated it into perfect English. So what that told me is that whoever did that had created the document in English, translated it to French for our benefit. Nice. We're not a French company. So, but apparently if you translate it one way and write back, it'll come back perfect. All right, who's up next, Groovehouse?
Up next.
In Spanish.
En español. I don't know.
Julian!
It's Ted.
Ted. El Tedo. Hi, Ted, you're on the air. Ted.
Ted?
Ted.
All right, except I'm listening to the radio.
Oh, good? Turn the radio down.
That's all right.
That's delayed. Listen to the phone.
I got to call you back. They're talking about me on the radio.
And I heard somebody say that they were seeking people to tell them about their favorite games. And I'm very old, and I am not computer literate very much. My two favorite games predate the computer era, and both of them were interactive, however. One was called Carom Baseball, where you actually shot small pieces of wood that were the size of a checker, but they were hollowed out. And the other was called Ward Cuff's Football Game, NFL Football
Game. Is that the vibrating football game?
Ward Cuff was a famous halfback and defensive back for the New York Giants in the 1940s. And the way you played Carom Baseball, it was on a board that was about 2.5 feet square with a pocket at one end across from each other, diagonal. And the batter's box was one of the pockets, and it had a bar across it. And on the bar was a piece of metal that was a flat piece with a piece sticking down. And it could slide across the bar. The pitcher was backed by the home run pocket and would take one of these wooden round caroms, and with his finger, his middle finger pressed against his thumb, he would flick it, sort of like you shoot a marble, but he would flick it toward the batter, and the batter would then move the bar to try to hit the carom. And when the batter hit it, it would go out onto the board, which was marked off with the outfield was green with single, double, triple. The infield was brown, and the pitcher then would put a carom on the pitcher's mound and have to shoot the carom against the wall.
I think I get the idea. I think I get the idea on the game, Ted.
Sounds more complex than cricket.
Never mind.
No, it's all right. It sounds rather complicated. You have a? Can you find this game anymore?
Could I what?
Can you find this game? Is it available to be purchased anymore, or is it?
Well, it was made 60 years ago. I would be astonished if you 70 years ago.
Do you still have yours?
If you could find it.
How do you spell carom?
C-A-R-O-M.
C-A-R-O-M.
Why it was called carom was to get an out, you had to shoot your piece of wood against the board's wall, and then it would bounce. And if it hit the batter's ball, then the batter was out.
Right.
And
it sounds like if you could find a copy of this game, the Antiques Roadshow would probably tell you it was worth a lot of money.
At that time it cost $4.95.
Really? That was pretty expensive for the 40s.
The other one, and I'll be very brief, the other one, the football game, had seven little pieces on a strip of leather on each side for the linemen, and four freestanding pieces, one of which had a dot on it. And that was the ball carrier. And you had a little metal slingshot affair, and you would shoot one of the men against the dotted man, and either he would be stopped by this immovable line of scrimmage, or he would go on to gain yardage.
Wow.
And both of them were terrific games and would occupy my friends and I for afternoons on end.
Did your parents used to get after you about stop playing that game and get outside and get some sunshine and fresh air?
Well, we'd be so excited by the game, of course we'd run out in the fresh air and then play...
play real football and baseball.
We'd play touch football in the street, which was always an adventure.
Well, we appreciate your call tonight, Ted, and sharing those great memories with us.
All right.
All right, have a good evening.
Bye-bye.
I was waiting for it to turn into a transformer.
Yeah.
Don't give him any ideas.
Now you've opened that door.
And then when you shot the carom ball, it hit the thing, and then it turned into a transformer.
Those sound like very, very interesting games.
But they're not transformers.
No, and they're not electronic or computer based. No. Back in the olden days, we didn't
have wood doesn't conduct electricity.
Yeah, he should have called into our other show, Luddite Spite.
Amish tech support, how may I help? All right, Groove House, who do we have up next?
Up next.
In French.
Oui, oui. Francisco.
Francisco, you're on the air.
Okay.
Francois. Well. Bonjour.
Unfortunately, I don't speak French.
Neither do we, obviously.
It's kind of weird that the last caller actually talked about games, because this whole thing began with my trying to load a computer game, and it led me to a question about video cards.
Your carom card.
Yeah. I don't know if I want to go into the game as such. It doesn't really matter, but the relevant details are that I've got a computer that seems to more than fulfill all of the required tech specs. The computer game in question won't start. After a fairly lengthy check of tech support boards, I finally wound up on a fan board. They said it was my video card, which almost doesn't make sense to me, in that the computer that I've got is much more recent than the computer game. But the computer game requires like an NVIDIA 7800 or better, and I have this Intel G33/31, which I understand is something called an integrated chipset, and I'm not at all even sure what that means.
That means that it uses the memory from your system for the video memory. It borrows it from the main system. That is not a really good graphics card for playing games. It may be relatively new, but it doesn't match the power in the NVIDIA. The minimum for the NVIDIA spec. So you're either going to need to run it on a different machine or upgrade to a new video card if that machine will let you. Is it a notebook or is it a desktop?
It's a desktop. It's a Dell.
A lot of Intel-based systems that have the Intel graphics cards don't have additional AGP or PCI Express slots for an additional video card. You'll have to determine that by checking on the support website for Dell or opening the case. If it does have it, then you just need to get a new video card.
If it doesn't, is there a soldering trick that I can do? Or
you're kind of screwed if it doesn't.
Lovely. Well,
what is the game, by the way?
Oh, I can actually say that on the air. It's sure. Oblivion.
Oblivion? Yeah, Oblivion has a pretty high... has pretty high system requirements, and it will not work well on that processor.
Or that at all, card. More to the point.
So you'll need to... what is the model of the computer?
We walk into the room that contains the computer.
And how old is it?
We bought it about a year ago. And,
Kind of one tip, if you're looking for a low-priced gaming computer... one that has an AMD processor, almost all AMD motherboards have an open graphics slot.
Okay.
A lot of Intel motherboards, and Dell uses Intel motherboards, do not.
But for the record, it's an Inspiron 530.
Yeah, what you should do is go to Dell's website, look at the specs on it, look at the slots, and see if it does indeed have that. If it does, you're in good shape.
Okay.
And the good news is you can do pretty well and not spend a lot of money, you could get a pretty decent graphics card for around, say, $80.
Oh, so if it's got the slot, then fine. Well,
and that'll be a PCI. If it has it, it'll be a PCI Express slot in that machine.
Okay. That addresses all my questions.
Pete, were you going to say something?
Yeah, the caller, you need to remember this story so that in 60 years you can call into a technology show and tell them about how you had this game, but you had integrated video, and I needed a separate card, and just remember all this now so that you can...
And make a good rambling story for in your senior years.
So I'll be writing all of this down in about a minute. So.
Well, write it down because, you know, you will forget it as you get older.
Oh, yeah.
Trust me. Trust us.
Thanks again.
Thanks for your call, Francisco. All
right. Have a good night.
You too. All right. 713-526-5738.
See, I'm front-loading us for Technology Bytes, you know, 2103 or whatever.
We ought to write down some, we ought to, like, make some on-air predictions, but also write them down for 5 years from now. I mean, assuming we still have a slot on the air in 5 years or, but, you know, if we should have done, like, you know, 15 years ago, write stuff down about what we thought was going to be available, because we've seen some amazing stuff happen. In the last,
that's right.
Last 14
years.
I'm
thinking maybe we just need to do for what is it, January 1, 2013, since there's all the doomers about 2012.
You're assuming you're going to get to be around for 2013. Obviously, you're a non-believer.
Well, you said five. We should have put our predictions down for in 5 years.
Oh, I see. So we'll put it down for 2013, so that. If the world comes to an end, we're not held accountable for inaccuracy. All right, good plan. All right, 20 minutes till 9 o'clock, so we got plenty of time before Barrett time. If you want to be on the air with us tonight, 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. Groove House, who's up next?
Up
in Pig Latin.
X-Nay, Ulian J.
Ulian J.
Yes, hello guys, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Fine, thanks. I have a computer, but it won't come on. It's a compact Presario. I bought it 3 years ago.
So it won't come on at all? You press the power button, you get no lights or anything?
Well, I get lights around the keyboard for 5 seconds.
That's showing power going to the keyboard. But what about like the power indicator light or anything like that?
It's on just for 5 seconds and then goes off for about a second, and then they come back on again, and they just keep doing the same thing over and over again.
Is this a desktop or laptop?
I thought laptop.
Laptop, okay. Well, that is a hardware issue. So you say it's an HP laptop?
Yeah.
Like a NW8000 or an NC6000 or what?
It's a compact Presario V6000.
Okay, and it's 3 years old?
Yeah.
Well, but you're having some type of hardware issue. It's not going to be something that's going to be something that you can fix on your own necessarily. It could be as simple as a short somewhere in the power switch, or it could be a sign of a system board problem. You're going to have to take that computer to a technician and let them have a look at it if you want to try to save the computer.
Okay.
Someplace like the computer hospital, or that's the only place I know that does laptop repairs. And you can find them online if you Google search computer hospital Houston. They do laptop repairs, but they don't tend to be worth fixing. If it's not under warranty, you're looking at spending a few hundred dollars probably just to have a technician look at it and repair it.
Okay.
So it may not be worth that money to get it repaired unless it's a particularly high-end laptop, because you can buy a new laptop these days for right around $400, $500 that is going to be just exponentially faster and more capable than that computer. So
yeah, I would think so.
Have you tried... taking the battery out of this and starting it with the charger connected to just the charger connected to it, no battery in it?
I tried that already and it didn't work. So, yeah, I might have to, you know, probably buy a new one.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's not something that you know that there's just a quick fix for, that there's a software setting or anything for. That computer's actually experiencing a physical problem.
And
if it was a desktop, we might consider changing out the power supply or something like that. But a laptop, because of the integration of all the components, there's not like just a power supply that you can go in there and take out and replace. There's the way that the power feeds the system and the system diverts that to the battery and so forth. It is
complicated.
Yeah. I'm sorry I don't have a better answer for you on that one.
Oh, that's all right. I was fearing this. But, thanks anyway.
All right, have a good evening. Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
Ah, dead laptops. Womp, 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 womp. No, all right. Who's up next?
Up next, in English, we've got Charlotte.
Charlotte, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hello.
I wondered if you knew where or what I could ask for. I'm trying to find a radio that will tune into TV stations. I'm preparing for a hurricane season.
Yeah. Well, they make... I've got a little radio that I bought.
Not anymore.
You're right. Because of the digital broadcasting, there's...
Yes. The analog... They apparently, the Chronicle did a story a while back about this issue, and there are some devices that will pick it up. I don't know yet if there are radios that will pick up the digital signal.
They will do digital conversion.
But you can now get small televisions that have digital, that are battery powered, that have the digital converter in it. They're not easy to find, but at this point, I don't think there are any other radios.
That didn't even dawn on me.
Yeah. Because I had one of those old TVs, the small ones, and I know they said they wouldn't work with the new conversion, so I thought, well, maybe there would be a radio.
Yeah, there also apparently there are some converter boxes that are battery powered. You know, again, they're not a lot of them out there, and of course, once those batteries die, you've lost the capabilities for it. But you're going to have to look around for that. It's not going to be easy to find right now.
So, what would the terminology be for the TV?
You want one that handles a digital broadcast?
Digital, okay.
I would bet you that
they'll be out soon.
Oh, okay.
I would check, if are you going to be taking a trip anywhere anytime soon where you fly? Because Sky Mall probably has five or six of them in their magazine.
Yes. Well, I just got back from St. Louis, and I went through the Sky Mall catalog, and there wasn't one in there. So
really?
I thought, well, let me call you.
What about Sharper Image?
No, I haven't checked there.
Check with Sharper Image. I mean, it would be a premium, but you could at least get a Brookstone.
Sharper Image went out of business.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm,
okay.
And I would also just do a Google search, because I'll bet you could find one also maybe on Amazon.com.
Right.
They may be very expensive right now. I'm not finding too many that are cheap.
I'm guessing
you're finding them?
I'm seeing one and rumors of some that are coming out, but none that I can actually buy right now.
Although
I bet it's just one of those lag things. I bet, into summer they're going to start hitting, I would assume.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Now, the one thing that you'll be able to do if you during hurricane season, if you have something like a smartphone that uses applications like the iPhone or the Android or the Palm Pre, there are applications that let you listen to the radio using that, as well as some television. So that comes over the internet, which is different. Now that requires, of course, that that cellular towers be working. You may be able to get some information that way. That may be an option as well.
The other issue is, of course, the digital signals don't go out as far as the old analog ones. So unless you're close in, you may not, even if you got a radio that can receive it, you may not,
right,
may not be able to pick it up over the air without an antenna and all that stuff.
Well, I just found this one on Amazon. It's a TV audio digital tuning pocket for $60. So I'm not sure if this does it or not. It looks like it might. But I'd say dig around on Amazon in their electronics section looking for digital TV tuner or digital TV radio. And I guess the thing you'd want to be able to do is, make sure it would actually receive anything. and see if it would pick, you know, be able to get you any signal at all. I mean, during the last hurricane, I used my little radio. I had a little battery-powered AM/FM TV tuning radio that I never even had to change batteries on in 6 days. It just ran and ran and ran, and that was great for because we had, you know, obviously no power, no TV.
Right.
And the TV stations were doing their diligence by broadcasting 24-hour hurricane information or recovery information. So I didn't even think about that. Now that radio's useless.
Right. Except for the radio part.
Well, the radio's still good. Let's just not have any hurricanes till we get this technology part.
That sounds like a great idea.
All right, who's up next, Groovehouse?
Let's see. Up next, we've got Sam.
Sam, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. I have a question regarding a NAS device that is manufactured by Dell. It's a device that allows connectivity through a remote desktop. And I was having some problem with the device where it said that I need to reinstall TCP/IP on it. So I uninstalled TCP/IP and not realizing as soon as I uninstalled it.
You would no longer be able to connect to it.
That's correct. Now, I have tried numerous times connecting to the device using a serial connection, but it doesn't allow me to connect. So my question is there a way for me or tool that is available for me to either reinstall TCP/IP on this device?
Well, does it say that it supports a serial connection in the manual somewhere?
Yeah, I kind of downloaded the user guide from Dell and followed it to every single step. And it actually connects and authenticates my username and password to the device.
Mm-hmm.
But then it comes back and says that there is a TCP/IP stack error. And it doesn't allow me to open up a remote console.
How old is the device?
It's about a 4-year-old device.
Okay, so it's out of warranty, so you don't have an option to call Dell.
Right. I mean, my objective right now is I have a lot of work that is stored on that device. So
Does it use like standard hard drives? Does it have like, what does it use? Does it use IDE hard drives?
Yeah,
these are regular IDE hard drives with RAID on it. So there are about 5 different drives on it, all RAID.
How are they rated? Do you know what the configuration is?
I think it's RAID 5.
Hmm. Do you know what kind of RAID controller card's on there? Is it their standard perk, like their perk 5i?
I don't know. I have no idea. So I guess what I'm trying to find out, if I just take the drive out and maybe read it through an external, maybe like a USB controller.
No, it's not going to go. The only way you're going to have any luck with that is if you can find a RAID controller card that can put that set of drives back into RAID 5 the exact same way that embedded RAID controller card in your Dell NAS device does now. Because what's happened is you've got data that's been striped and splashed across several drives, and if you just load up a single drive, you know, that's even if the file system gets recognized, you're just going to have chunks of data here and there. You're not going to have your complete file system. So that's not the way you want to go.
Okay. What do you all recommend doing?
I'm not familiar with Dell's NAS offerings.
Yeah, is it PowerVault or is it a server?
A server. I mean, but it doesn't have there's no way for me to connect it to, like, I would a regular server and log on locally and reinstall TCP/IP.
Okay, so it's not like a brand name server that you could just throw a copy of Windows on. It's a appliance, right?
That's correct.
Okay, does it say PowerVault on it anywhere that you know of?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's 715, and that's the model number of it.
Okay, and you said that when you connect to the console, it won't let you get any commands, it won't let you put in a question mark, it won't let you type help, it won't let you do anything like that?
No, nothing like that. The only thing it allows me to see is like a pre-boot sequence, so it shows me that it went through RAM test and things like that, but after that, it does come back with an error saying that communication established, TCP/IP, and I don't know the exact error, but it says TCP/IP's some to instance that there was some error connecting through TCP/IP, and some commands may not be available.
Okay, there's, I don't know if you want to go this far, Dell's got a support page up, and it's actually the European Dell, but they actually tell you how to reinstall Microsoft Windows onto one of those devices.
Okay. Now, if I go through a reinstallation of that, is it going to keep my is it going to keep my file system, correct? It's just going to go over...
It should. You could do a repair install of Windows XP, and it would only overwrite the system files and leave your user-created directories and so forth intact.
Okay.
But I would pay very close attention to whatever the process is described on how it wants you to do that to make sure that that is so.
And you should be able to look up descriptions of that device to see if the volumes that are used for the RAID volume is the same disk that's used to install the OS. Because some NAS solutions or RAID systems will have a separate OS disk from the disks that they actually use for the RAID volumes.
Okay. I'm going to give that a shot. I appreciate all your help.
All right, thanks for your call this evening. Good luck.
Thank you.
All right. 5 minutes till the top of the hour. 713-526-5738 is the number to call. We've got a few open lines. We'll see if we can get one or two more calls before Barrett time. Who's up next?
Up next, we've got Shashinga.
Shashinga, how are you tonight?
Hi, I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. What can we do for you?
I've been having problems with my Gateway laptop computer since March, and sometimes it works, and then sometimes it doesn't. Like, when I press the power button, the hard drive light doesn't come on, but the wireless button and the battery button always come on. And then, like, sometimes it does work. So I don't know what the problem actually is. I think it's something to do with the hard drive. Like,
how old is the computer?
It's 4 years old.
4 years old. Well, if you suspect that it's the drive that's failing, you could purchase a new hard drive for the laptop. They aren't terribly expensive, but you'd have to reload your software and so forth.
Okay.
But it's typically, if it's the hard drive that's failing, the computer itself would start up and post and give you BIOS messages and then tell you it couldn't load the operating system or that it didn't detect the hard drive. So the fact that it's not coming on, if you're pressing the button, the lights are coming on, you're not getting anything to the display at all. It's probably not the hard drive. It's probably either the display or the system board.
Okay.
So unfortunately, like the previous caller who called in about his laptop demonstrating similar symptoms, they don't tend to be worth fixing unless 4 years ago you bought a very top-of-the-line laptop. But there's a place in Houston called the Computer Hospital, which specializes in laptop repairs, and if you're determined to get this thing fixed, you could contact them about what it would cost for a diagnostic.
Oh, okay.
And the fact that you aren't seeing any hard drive light as well as the display would probably indicate that it is a system board,
right,
as opposed to just the display.
Right, the drive controller not firing up because the system board isn't firing up, and that's why you're seeing no drive activity. Sorry to tell you that.
Oh, that's okay. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks for your call.
All right, bye-bye.
Yeah, she may not necessarily be all that broken up if she's been pining for a new notebook. So that may be giving her good news.
Could be.
And hang up the phone and go, yes!
Or maybe hear that, honey?
Maybe she just hasn't realized that she lost all of her pictures and everything.
No, she has everything backed up, yeah.
if it comes up again, the first thing she should do is try and get everything off. And even if you don't have like a removable drive or something handy to do that, wait till you get it in the same room. And then when it comes up again, you never know if it's going to be for its last time. You just turn that on and off.
Then yeah, anytime
punch
you,
it as hard
you
as
start
you can.
Having trouble with your machine, back the thing up if you have not.
Well, on the plus side, if it is the system board and stuff, then the drive is probably intact. And that you can buy an adapter pretty cheap to
pull the drive out of it.
Yeah, and put the drive in, connect it as an external drive to another computer to save your files and so forth. So it's not the end of the world. I'd almost rather have my computer die than my hard drive die.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just want my data. I'll get another computer. So that's what I'm worried about now, that this iMac, apparently it's hard to get the drive out of it.
Time machine.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did get a time machine drive.
I've got to go shopping for time machine drives this weekend.
Since it's only a terabyte now is what, $100 or $110 for...
Pretty silly.
It's pretty ridiculous. I've never been to Fry's. I feel like I don't.
You've never been to Fry's?
I've never been to Fry's.
Wow.
Any of them?
Jay?
Shame on you.
Should we go with Jay? Should we all go?
I don't know. I went to the one on the north side, and it's gone downhill. Like, I'm glad I didn't get shot on the networking aisle.
There's one in Sugar Land, so that's not.
The one in Sugar Land, that's a nice one. And actually, there's one out by in Clear Lake, about 45
NASA
South, that looks like it's set up like a space station.
I want to go to that one. I'd go to that one with Jay.
Yeah, I've been to that one. Jay.
Well, my fear is that it's going to be like the Incredible Universe, which is like, you know, I really liked that store when it was open.
Wow, that's a name I haven't heard in a while.
Yeah.
Now it's Incredible University.
Yes, it is.
Because the ACC took over the
Incredible
Community
College.
I think one of the Fry's, one of the original Fry's in Dallas was an Incredible Universe before it became a Fry's. They just moved right in to space.
Wow.
Yeah, I think we ought to go with Jay.
Well, I need to buy one or two external hard drives, one for backing up and one for just, you know, storing photos and stuff. So I want to get a FireWire drive. Mm-hmm. Is that ridiculous?
No.
And a FireWire, it's kind of...
It's not ridiculous.
It's not ridiculous, but it's not required.
Well, I was
You'll probably
about,
find that it's got FireWire and USB 2.
Yeah,
a
lot of them have both.
You could go to the store, or you may, since you're doing it for an iMac, you may want to look at, like, Otherworld Computing. I think it's, like, MacSales.com.
How much money am I going to save, really, on a hard drive and memory if I mean, I'd rather just go, you know, pick it up, get it, put it in my hand, and, you know, pay the premium to actually just walk away with it instead of...
Well, the nice thing about the memory, if you get it from a place like MacSales or what's the one that starts with a C?
Crucial.com.
You get it from there. You order it from there. They've got a configurator. Say, I have this, and they send you the exact memory. If you walk into Fry's, you kind of have to know exactly what it is. And Apple computers can be somewhat finicky when it comes to memory.
Definitely.
Well,
so
Crucial has the memory scanner.
Yes.
Right? They have a client for the Mac that'll do that too.
Right.
They'll look at what you have and tell you what you need.
Right. So that's a, you know, but in terms
But you can scan it, determine what you need, and then go buy it.
Yeah, they carry Crucial and they carry brands like that, so you could do that.
But, I mean, I was just wondering if the savings are significant or not.
It depends on whether they're having a sale. You know, ultimately, a sale at a physical store or with a rebate will sometimes be better than what you can get online, but not always. But there is that instant gratification of walking
in. Well, I mean, if you're talking about $5 a chip or something, like, that's not significant enough to do that whole... Give your credit card to the internet and then wait for the postman to arrive.
Well, go down with the G1 and just scan the tags in and just compare right there. It's worth a field trip. I'd say if you haven't been, go check it out.
There's a real interesting business in Houston called Directron, and it's very similar to Newegg. In fact, it's a big national provider of computer hardware. They largely cater to gamers and modders.
I used to buy stuff from
them. Right. And they have a website, and their prices are competitive with Newegg, sometimes better. And you buy it, and then you can drive over to their warehouse and pick it up. You don't have to have it shipped.
What's the name of it again? Axion
Directron.
Is Axion still around? I've heard about Axion Tech.
They're still around, although they've still got a shop here out I-10. They moved to Dallas for some reason, so I don't know how well they're doing it. I think the one Dwight's talking about is just out 290. But there is something
It's Beltway 8
and West Park. Beltway 8 and West Park.
Right.
It's in a strip warehouse buildings. Because I used to go there and pick stuff up.
In fact, when you order it on the website, there's an option to pick it up at their location. So if you're
go there, they don't want you sitting there browsing the computer for a long time. But they actually have a computer in the. It's like a small waiting area where you can order, or you can just go to pick it up if you've already ordered it online.
Yeah, Axion Tech did kind of the same thing. You walk in, and it was like a very bare room with a counter and a couple of servers.
But Axion Tech actually had, like, some stuff you could purchase. Like, they had a little showroom, like, with
a few
shelves.
And they do now at Directron also.
I hate to derail this great conversation, but it is the top of the hour.
Oh.
Just want to remind you that you're listening to KPFT Houston 90.1 FM. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I've been to Directron.
I'm Garrett.
I'm Dwight. And he's
Groovehouse.
In multiple languages.
but si. Mostly the language of love.
Amor.
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 All right. Well, we'll get back to this hardware discussion here in a minute, but let's do Barrett time. Oh, what?
During Barrett time, I am going to drop off. I'm going out of town tomorrow, and so loot my house while I'm gone.
Post all your gadgets to get you.
Yeah, I'll put a list of all my old gadgets and where they're located in my. No, there'll be people here, but I'm going out of town, and I have to go and run to a store before 10
Where are
o'clock.
You going?
Oh, I'm just I'm taking the kids and going up to my parents' lake house.
Ah. Well, enjoy the heat and the mosquitoes.
There's water. Their lake has water.
Oh,
so it'll be plenty cool.
Breeding ground. All right. Well, enjoy and thanks for being with us. We'll see you next week, Pete.
All right. See you. Bye.
All right. Play the music. Sing the song. Dance the dance.
Hey, Barrett. What's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you
Barrett time! Barrett time! Barrett time!
Yeah. That means it's time for
Barrett time!
Yeah. Anyway, take it away, Barrett.
All right. While last weekend may have been a time to do, this weekend is a time to reflect on a number of anniversaries, the most popular of which is the anniversary of the birth of our nation. The way things play out on the calendar this year, the 4th of July falls on a Saturday, meaning no three-day weekend for most of us, taken from The Simpsons, and that if the boss told you, don't bother coming in Monday if you take Friday off.
Woohoo! Four-day weekend!
Probably doesn't mean you got a four-day weekend, exactly. Now, the good news is that if you dig pyrotechnics, as most of us do, the U.S.'s largest land-based fireworks show will be happening right here in Houston, Texas. www.houstontx.gov/July4. That's houstontx.gov/July4 for their full scoop on times, viewing locations, and where to catch it from the comfort of your computer chair. Anyway, in addition to the display in the air, there's going to be an official 4th of July festival called Freedom Over Texas. The event's free and honors military heroes as well as the 40th anniversary of the Apollo 11 lunar landing. The Apollo 11 mission was the first manned mission to land on the moon. It's the fifth human space flight of the Apollo project and the third human voyage to the moon. It was also only the second all-veteran crew in manned spaceflight history. Launched on July 16th, it carried Mission Commander Neil Alden Armstrong, Commander Module Pilot Michael Collins, and Lunar Module Pilot Edwin Eugene Aldrin, Jr., a.k.a. Tom Hanks. I mean, hold on. Buzz Aldrin, I mean. Sorry. Both Wikipedia and NASA.gov have a ton of info on the flight. Now, this next piece of news may be good or bad, depending on your feelings about Clay Walker, a well-known country music singer whose music will be featured during the Freedom Over Texas Festival. Yeah, of course, this is why we've got portable music players. So if you're not a country music fan, just pull out your iPod, your Lyra, or your Pocket Concert. And I'm not making that up. That's an actual Intel device. I think White may have had a review one before. At least I hope that was a concert in your pocket. Anyway, even a Zoom will do if you're not a member of the Clay Walker fan club. I said that this was a weekend of reflection. Should have said it was a weekend of reflection and segues, as this week marks the 30th anniversary of what took mobile music from 12D batteries down to 4 AA's. Guesses?
The Segway.
The Segway. Right, the Sony Walkman. Actually, the Sony Walkman, definitely the iPod of its day. It started the portable music revolution, so it's 30 years old this week. I was around for the Walkman, as was just about everyone in the room. Groove's probably the only one who may have still been teething at the time, but we all were around for it. Your current 13-year-old, however, was not. So to give a nod to the device that started it all, BBC Magazine talked to tech-savvy 13-year-old boy into swapping his iPod for an original 1979 Walkman for a week, and then see what he had to say about the experience. So aside from being dismayed by the general heft of the thing, he liked the ability to share the Walkman's music easily with a friend. But don't the current portable players let you share music with a friend over a Wi-Fi or personal area network? I guess what would it take for the current gen players to match the old school in this kind of functionality? The answer is kill all the Bluetooth music sharing tech and just threw a second 1/8-inch jack on there. So low tech for the win. He said he really liked it because of the ease of friend sharing music with what's currently offered to the modern players. The reaction of the kids at school were mixed, and at least one teacher got a little nostalgic at seeing the thing. Some surprises. It took him 3 days to figure out that there was another side to the cassette tape. He was also confused by the metal and normal switch on the device, at first thinking it was some sort of genre-specific equalizer. So not normal if you're clapping with with clay or metal if you're rocking with Dokken, but rather metal to designate the materials like magnetite or cobalt-absorbed iron oxide have been bonded to the magnetic tape inside the cassette in an effort to improve fidelity. Some of the obvious ones. Let's see, the Walkman not having a shuffle setting caused the device to take a hit in the 13-year-old's estimation. Also, the device's capacity and the need for a stockpile of actual tapes to fuel more than an hour's listening were sticking points. All in all, though, he confirmed that portable music trumps music that isn't any day. For the full article, you can hit news.bbc.co.uk and search for Giving Up iPod for Walkman. That's it for your migration down memory lane, and that's that for Barrett Time.
You know, you've skipped an anniversary.
Our anniversary.
Yes.
Yes.
This month, Technology Bites celebrates 14 years on the air. We're not going to have an anniversary party this year. We're going to have an anniversary party on our 15th year. So in another year, if we're still around, we'll take all those predictions we're going to write down tonight.
It's going to take us a whole year to plan it.
Although if you're truly geeky and at home on a Friday night, you could hop into IRC just to see that no one else is there.
Woo! Throw some digital confetti and wish us a happy birthday. But
talk to the bot. That's
14 years.
That's right. That means we're a little pimply and got some chin hair. So
we're sprouting hair where there was no hair before.
Yes, that's not terrible.
So back to the conversation about going to Fry's. So what, we were making out again?
Maybe that could be our geek gathering.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What are you doing tomorrow, Arm? But what are you doing on Friday?
Oh, Friday I'm working.
Sam, the right company was so nice. They're giving us Friday off since the 4th of July is on a Saturday. You're not getting...
No, I'm off. I'm off Monday.
Ah.
But I'm doing so many little things that are kind of work-related on Monday that I may as well not be off, but technically I am. But, so we could go Saturday.
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 Let's touch base on that.
All right.
Maybe.
Make it a date. And we definitely need
play date with Dwight.
Play
date with
Dwight. And we definitely need to Twitter it. I think that's definitely a
Twitter Jay's first Twitter trip to Fry's.
That's a Twitter worthy event.
Which one do we go to? Do we make the trek to Clear Lake or do we go to Sugar Land?
Sugar Land's probably good for you is a good central one. And that's a quality Fry's.
It's a quality Fry's.
It's pretty good, yeah.
Does that have a theme?
No, that one kind of doesn't.
You know what
really.
The theme? The theme is
brown
corporate generic box store.
Yeah, yeah, it really doesn't.
It doesn't have a theme at all, really. Yeah. I don't think.
I've been in the one on. I usually go to the one on the north side on 45 North, and I was there maybe about a month, 6 weeks ago, maybe, and I don't recall it being. I don't recall it being that run down.
The shelves were just really gone over, and it was, you know, it was super hot out. That was the day it was 105, so just maybe the store employees were just, they were just done. It was too hot. But yeah, just everything was everywhere. I couldn't find, I was just trying to match, like, yellow cables.
Yeah.
Actually, any standard color of yellow cable to where I could get three different lengths of the same color.
Right.
And, like, the reds weren't, they were orange. They were, it was just, everything was everywhere. It was, it was bad. And then some kind of stuff went
so
down.
So as a high-tech professional, you didn't feel very well.
No. I feel like they weren't catering to my color needs.
I have to get a... my daughter got...
Hang in there, John and Derek. We'll get to you.
My daughter got a her college notebook this week. She got a MacBook Pro, the same one Barrett has, only has a sealed battery, and it's a newer one.
Yeah.
And I got to give her a Time Machine drive as well. So, but she's just getting a little one, so she's not going to get a terabyte.
Does Time Machine allow you to just specify certain folders to back up, or does it back up the whole thing?
It, by default, it backs up the whole thing. You can exclude certain folders. So, for example, if you don't want to include your system folder, which you can replace by reinstalling,
right?
You could do that, and you can tell it, you know, everything but the home folder. But it's a good idea, I think, to let it go ahead and just do everything. Now, I've had a hard drive crash. In my notebook, and being able to restore just the whole thing in one go, it's very, very
like you just brought it up and it said, oh, I see there's a Time Machine with a backup.
Right.
Do you want to restore? And basically the new machine was back just like the old machine had been.
Right. The only thing that it didn't do, I had to like put in my Microsoft Office activation key again.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, there are little things where certain settings, apparently maybe from hidden files that didn't get copied over, were gone. But other than that, it was exactly as I'd left it.
713-526-5738. is the number to call to be on the air, 713-526-KPFT. Groove House?
Yes.
Who do we have?
Up next, we've got Derek.
Derek, you're on
the
air.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
I noticed earlier that a gentleman called in inquiring about the specs for playing Oblivion. I just wanted to throw in a quick note that although the specs were, I think it said like an NVIDIA 7600 or something like that, just wanted to throw in a quick note that for it to be, you know, decently appealing to the
enjoyable.
Eye. Enjoyable.
maybe something around maybe like an 8600 GT or maybe a little higher. It's yesteryear's card, so they're probably in the bargain bin by now, and it's still going to get the job done really well.
Yeah, the 8600 is a really good card, and probably worth, and probably you'll get it for under $100.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Just given the age, and it can still pull off quite a bit considering.
Can I play this game in a virtual machine on my iMac?
No, because a virtual machine will handle 3D up to a certain point, but something as demanding as Oblivion, it just won't. It won't do it.
Well, I just wanted to toss in my two cents.
Appreciate that, Derek, very much. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
All right.
Now, if you were running Boot Camp, where it runs natively actually on the hard drive, it would work with that.
Have you guys seen some of the game virtualization services that are out there? More or less, they're taking these games, and I forget, I don't want to drop any names, they're mainly because I can't remember the names of the companies, but it hit Slapshot a couple days ago. Mm-hmm. But there are companies that are taking, like a World of Warcraft, or say, like a really heavily computer-intensive game, and they're hosting it in the cloud, and then what they do is they give you a computer connection to it, you control it through your keyboard, and then they render the video into a stream. So it's like you're watching like a high-def movie that's streaming, but you don't have to have any of the process or anything else because everything's rendered out there on the farm, out in the cloud. So
there's
that, kind of break down
Game
the
Citrix.
Yes. There's a game.
Game Remote Desktop.
There's a version of Quake 3 Arena that it is offering called Quake Live. That is all played in your browser.
Yeah, the same thing. All these games are delivered into the browser, which is pretty cool.
And it's exactly it plays exactly like Quake 3 Arena. It's beautiful.
Wow.
And you can't do that on a Mac yet, but they're working on the browser plugin for the Mac.
Well, this new iMac is the most capable machine I've ever owned. I mean, you know, every time you buy a new computer, obviously that's the case. But this really is, you know, it's been 3 or 4 years since I bought my last computer. This computer has a lot of computing cojones, but no games.
Well, if you want to...
I'm not a big gamer, but also because I've never really had a machine that could handle the rendering of the really high-end stuff.
Well, if you
want
to play
Call of Duty, but not...
not 5.
Because it's
Duty. You want to play 4.
Yeah.
if you want to play games, you could do a Boot Camp installation, and that will let you do it. And both Parallels and Fusion, VMware Fusion... will use that installation of Windows
as
their virtual machine. So
really?
Like reach down and you need only have one copy of Windows and it'll pull it up and use that.
Wow.
So you may want to experiment with that a little bit.
I wonder, should I load Vista or Windows 7 or just XP to get the maximized Windows experience for just utilitarian Windows experience for playing games or whatever on an iMac? Would XP probably be my best?
XP would do well. I've got Vista on my Boot Camp, and Vista on that 24-inch iMac screen with the translucent windows is just gorgeous. And I play games on that.
And it's pretty snappy for gaming?
Yeah. I'm planning to upgrade it to Windows 7 when the final version comes out. I'm just going to upgrade it like you would upgrade... I'm going to upgrade Vista like you would anything else.
Right.
And I think that... that probably you could go with either Vista or XP. XP would give you kind of a more pure and a simpler environment.
Have you pre-ordered your Windows 7?
I'll probably get a review copy, and I'll probably put that on the iMac.
Okay. Well, 713-526-5738. We got calls in the queue. We are going to go to the next one. Groove House, who is it?
Up next, we've got John.
John, you're on the air. Hello, John. Oh, John.
20 minutes you were on hold.
Poor John. He had to hold for so long.
It was a good question, too.
He wanted to talk about security.
Mm-hmm.
John. Hello.
He put us on hold.
John wants.
Well, we're going to wait for the 7 seconds to pass in case he's listening to the radio. his cue. Hello, John.
No, John.
All right, sorry, John.
Sorry, call back.
Been compromised.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's already off the
breach,
network.
Breach. Firewall breach. All right. 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. If you want to be on the air with us, we've got lots of open lines. We've got one call in the queue, and that is who, Groovehouse?
That is Cheryl.
Cheryl, you're on the air.
Hello. Yes, hi. My computer, if I want to print something, it will turn my computer off. So I've gotten to where I'm sort of conditioned negatively that I don't want to press print because it will make my computer turn off and then turn back on right away. So, I mean, I know that's not good.
No.
So it's bugging me, and then I unplugged the printer and I plugged it into a different power strip and a different plug, you know, on the wall. And that doesn't help. So I'm just wondering.
I've never, ever heard of that problem before. So congratulations on that one.
You're kidding.
I've never seen, but if I had to guess, I would say that it is probably something having to do with the way that the computer is interacting with the print driver software that is causing the system to crash and then reboot. And you probably have the setting on Windows when it crashes to just automatically reboot instead of just show you the error message. So what I would do, first of all, is just try going to the website of the printer maker. You know, is it an HP printer, you say?
No, it's actually a Xerox printer, a pretty big one, a 2 foot by 2 foot by 2 foot sort of. Yeah. Or maybe, you know. It's a pretty big desktop that I brought from my office home. It's a Xerox. Just a second here. I can't see it.
Okay, take your time.
It was like a 500 or something. Do you need that number off of that?
No, but I get an idea of what it is. How did you get? Did you have to install drivers for this thing when you hooked it up the first time?
Well, I'm not sure what that means, but I just followed some directions and just...
Which directions? In a document, or when you plugged it in, did your computer start saying stuff to you?
It had the printer, the Xerox printer had, has a big red book, and then it has just a small fold-out, you know, pamphlet thing that you can use to hook up, just like when you hook up anything to your computer, and that's, as I recall, it's been a while.
Well, what I would do is maybe just try going through that process like you were hooking it up for the first time.
Okay.
And reinstall the software.
Okay.
And you might even check with the Xerox website to see if they have any updated software for that might be newer than what came on the disk.
I really appreciate it because, you know, I've been doing this for a while, and then finally this week it dawned on me, and I thought, I am really messing up my computer by this thing turning off and coming back on real quick.
Right.
I mean, it's just
one thing.
Not good.
What I would do is if you right click on the My Computer icon,
mm-hmm.
and select Properties.
Right.
And then go to the Advanced tab.
Uh-huh.
There's a button under Startup and Recovery.
Okay.
Where you click Settings on that. And there's a checkbox where it says automatically, it says system failure, and then it says automatically restart, and there's a checkbox.
Yes.
Uncheck that.
Oh.
And that, hopefully, if the whatever's causing the crash will show you the error message, and it will just stop there. I mean, it's still not good for your computer, but it might give you some insight into what's going on. But if I had to guess, I would say that the driver software has become corrupted, and when the computer goes to talk to the printer, it has to do that through a driver, and if that's messed up in any way, then it's just causing the system to kind of hiccup and reboot.
The driver software, you think of the computer? Or
right, the computer uses a driver to communicate with the printer. So when you are in Word or Excel or whatever, and you're working on a document, and you send that document to the printer, then the program you're in communicates to the computer, to the print driver. The print driver takes that information, formats it properly, and then it calls to the printer and says, here, print this through the print spooler and so forth. So that little process there, the key, the linchpin to that is usually the print driver. So it they do go out of whack sometimes, and they just need to be reinstalled. So I would consider doing that. Somebody did comment, called in while you were on the air, while you were asking your question, and was wondering if it's possible that the laser printer is just drawing too much power.
Well, that's what I thought. In other words, that was my little theory, was unplug it from the power strip, you know, that was shared by the computer, the monitor.
But if it's all on the same circuit anyway, I mean, you need to, like, take that maybe on an extension cord and run it to another part of the power to another part of the house.
I was thinking about that, too, and just getting some of this stuff off of here.
I mean, that
but
does,
no, I don't know if that may be true, but see, I...
Because it's such a big industrial printer, it may be that when the printer first, you know, goes to try to print the print job, that it's causing a brownout.
Those laser printers definitely draw a large wattage, like right when they very first start up, or right when they kick on. They'll draw a lot. I mean,
so when
it comes out
of sleep mode, or when you send that print job.
Yep, I've seen that them cause that.
Like, I mean, I know my wife when she sews in the other room, when she just goes to sew something, the sewing machine kicks on, and she goes to sew. The lights in my house dim just a little bit.
Yeah,
it's not enough. On the older houses, it's in my situation, it's not enough to actually cause the computer to reboot. But I could certainly see on the same circuit right there, that when that printer goes to, you know, come out of sleep mode and do its warm-up process, it may just be drawing too much power and causing your system just to, you know, brown out and reboot. That's certainly possible. So
that makes a lot of sense, and I really appreciate it, because I thought, I had another theory, but I don't think it's what it was. I had this whole thing set up in Houston. I actually brought the computer with me from New Mexico. It's about 10 years old, but... it was doing it in Houston, now that I recall, but I was blaming it on this house down here in Seabrook that got 4 feet of water for a while.
It sounds, I mean, now that we're thinking about it and as we're having this conversation, it does sound like it could be a power issue.
We had a caller, another comment call in and said, check the power input to the house. Sometimes those lines get corroded, and if it's bad, it could mess with the power also. You said if it is bad, to call your utility company, and they could come replace them.
I think that may be all right. Who knows? But that's another thing. You know, the house was built in 1966. And
yeah,
right.
If you have any idea what outlets are on different circuits, I don't know if you know that about your house.
I probably could do that, too, and that's, you know, another thing of every single person's been through here in the last 10 months.
Yeah, because if you just put that, if you can get the laser printer cord
to
an outlet that's on another circuit,
would help.
You might be fine, because I'm pretty sure that some of those laser printers, when they kick off at first, will draw up to like 10 to 12 amps just for like a second. And then they drop down to using, you know, 1 to 2 or whatever. But that first kickoff can be really high. And so if you have like a 15-amp circuit on there, you know, and you've already got some stuff that's a drawing, it could be enough to click it for a second.
And I'll get off me, because I know you have other calls. But I thought another thing maybe is before, you know, and when I sit down to, and I think I'm going getting ready to print, go ahead and open up the cover of the computer and let it start up. You know, let the light come on and let it start.
You mean of the printer?
Huh?
You mean of the printer?
Yeah, the printer, instead of just...
Well, hello?
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, now we can.
Okay, instead of just letting it come from sleep mode,
right,
straight into printing... Maybe I should kind of wake it up.
Well, you could try this as an experiment, too. You can, there's probably a test mode on the printer.
Uh-huh.
So you could
print a test sheet.
Or you print a test sheet.
Or a status sheet.
And that would basically take the printer through the same motions as if you were going to print to it from the computer, and see if that reboots your computer. Because at that point, it's not really talking to the computer at all.
Yeah.
That would tell you if it's power or not. So if you run the printer through its test mode...
Yeah, there's usually either a button or a sequence of buttons that you can cause it to send a print a test page.
Let me ask this. I'm not quite sure if I would be able to do that. I could, but if I figured...
It's usually just either a single button or a series of buttons, and if you it'll be in the manual for how to run a test. It's just so you can check.
Oh, okay, I got you. Because I was going to say just maybe hit copy... You know, while everything...
That might do it as well, if it's a god of the
car. I can tell you it doesn't ever do it that way.
No? Mm-mm. Okay.
It seems like when it's something that you have, you know, like an airline ticket or just anything. Actually, the more important it is, it seems like the more it does it.
Might just be too much printer for what you're trying to do in that house.
Yeah, I'm wondering whether I shouldn't...
Get yourself a $60 all-in-one fax printer, inkjet printer scanner thing and be done with it.
I'm thinking that too, is maybe see if somebody wants this for their office, because I really don't like
free
it
or best offer, you know, just put a sign on it.
Exactly. You know. That might be the best of all.
There you go.
Well, you all have been most helpful, and I really, really appreciate it.
Well, we really appreciate your call tonight, and thanks for saying that.
Thank you so much.
All right, have a good night.
Okay, bye-bye.
La 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 la. I'm ready for some Susan marches, I think. That's what... I haven't done this in so long, like since I was a teenager, but one of my favorite things to do is to go to Herman Park for the performance of the 1812 Overture at the Miller Outdoor Theater.
Yeah, I did that a few times.
16 cannons! And do the whole fireworks there on the hill and stuff. But do they still do that? Do we know?
I haven't gone in a few years, but maybe 3 or 4 years ago, they were still doing it.
Right.
Oh, awesome. All right, so Groovehouse is screening a call for us, and we're just going to go ahead and take line 3, because it looks like that's who's next. Going to punch up Doyle for us? Doyle, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. I don't have a lot of details about my problem, so any general advice or commentary would be appreciated. I have a computer that was given to me several years ago. It was fairly high-end at the time. The person who gave it to me had 2 hard drives that he said were striped together via RAID.
Right.
If that makes any sense. I'm not really sure. Okay, so I had a hard drive failure on it eventually, or what I assume was a hard drive failure. The individual who gave me the computer, who I'm no longer in contact with, said that I probably needed to get a new processor in order to even try to extract my data off the hard drive. I was wondering if there's any special problems or anything I need to know about, or is this something I just need to junk because there's absolutely no way to get my data back?
Well, it's a 2-drive RAID, so it's going to be RAID 0 or RAID 1.
Well, it depends on how you've got it configured. Do you know if it's striping or if it's mirroring the data on both drives?
I'm pretty sure it's striping because he said striped several times.
Yeah, it's mirrored is good because mirrored you can take either one of the 2 and run with it and it looks just like a normal drive. Striped is bad because that means that you've got data, you know, if you've got one file, it's across both drives. So you would need to be able to recreate both drives. And
which is probably why you're saying you would need a processor to basically get the system working again so that you'd have the same hardware to be able to see the drives again.
Is there any sort of unconventional way? I know there's lots of techniques to take information off a hard drive. Are any of those practical in my situation?
I mean, there is, but the way that the information's put down is usually in a fairly proprietary manner that's done by that RAID controller, and to be able to get it off in that same manner is pretty tough. I mean, you can maybe Google around and get lucky, but I would say it's going to be pretty difficult.
So my best bet is to try to get a new processor, install it, and then somehow boot it up from another drive with another operating system, and then see if I can see the hard drive. Is that about right?
That might be one way to do it. So what's the is it the drive that has failed, or is it the CPU that has failed?
I honestly don't know. It blue screened several times before it finally stopped working. And that's about all I can tell you. That's about all I remember, to be honest.
And it's a Dell?
So it may be the memory or the processor.
It wasn't a Dell. It was a totally home-built machine. He built it out of... Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you could conceivably try to... I don't even know. Can you get an external RAID controller that could put those drives in, maybe?
I mean, you can, but it needs to match on brand and model.
Yeah.
If at all possible. At least chipset and brand.
Yeah. But are the two drives that are in a RAID 1 configuration, is the OS installed on those, or are those data drives?
I believe the OS was installed. That's what I'm saying. I would assume
the best scenario would be if you could use the same motherboard and get, you know, a processor that fits in that motherboard. It didn't have to be the exact same speed, but it has to be a processor that will fit in that motherboard, basically to get the same hardware working.
Because that's assuming that it even is the system board or the CPU. I mean, it could be the system board. This could be the CPU is fine or the processor is fine.
And it could be the motherboard.
And the motherboard is
Or bad. The memory.
Or the memory.
Right. But because the OS is on those disks, the OS is going to have been tailored for drivers that are all for that motherboard and, you know, all the pieces of any parts that are on that motherboard. So the best scenario to be able to get the data off without going to somebody who would be trying to do data recovery, which isn't, with RAID is not very simple and can get really expensive really fast, would be to recreate the same system with all the same hardware.
Whoa, okay. So I would just need to use trial and error to determine what part actually failed and hope it was the hard drive, essentially.
Actually, you would want to hope it's not the hard drive.
Okay, all right. Because there'd be no way to get the data then, is that what you're saying?
Right. Because because in a striping situation like that, in RAID, like RAID 1, there's no data parity. So basically the data is written to both drives. So half the file, and it's in chunks. It's just like, you know, a file's broken up into 8,000 chunks.
Right.
And then every other one is on each drive. So if you lose one of those drives, half that data, which is all in little chunks, is gone, and you can't get it back. You can't recreate it.
Okay.
If you keep it, this is a question affected for you. If you keep a RAID setup defragmented, are you more apt to have files on one drive or the other if it's striped?
No, I don't think so. I mean, in a RAID 1 setup, it's actually splitting the data across the two all the time, because it's trying to speed up. It's trying to get, basically, in a RAID 1 situation, it's trying to give you speed, so you can get reads and writes faster than just on one disk. Now, in a RAID, like if you did RAID 0, then in that case, maybe, you know, you could get files all on one or the other. Actually, I'm messing that up.
I think that's one of the...
RAID 1. RAID 1 is Mirror.
RAID 1 and RAID 0 is...
I was talking about RAID 0, not RAID 1, but...
That's one of the problems when these people that build computers for their friends, or, you know, somebody who builds a computer, that might have been a really good idea, but to hand that off to somebody who doesn't understand the technology behind it, especially with something as complex as a RAID, you're inviting these kind
of
problems.
Yeah, you can get a lot more, you can get a lot bigger hard drive, you know, to look a lot bigger, but yeah, you're kind of inviting problems if something happens.
How critical is the data to you?
It's creative writing data. It's all text files. It's, you know, irreplaceable. So.
If worse comes to worse, you can contact a company like OnTrack. That's what they specialize.
And my guess, and I'm not talking about them specifically, but a lot of those data recovery companies, if you bring them RAID drives, it's gonna, I would guess, start at $500 or $800 and probably be in the thousands.
Well, usually it's with just an IDE drive, your diagnostic's going to run you a couple hundred dollars, which is non-refundable, and then that can be applied to the recovery. And on just a standard IDE drive, if it's like a clean room situation, is going to be $600 to $800 or more just to get the data off of it. And it also depends on how much data we're talking about. So the RAID is going to probably be more expensive, but you can contact OnTrack and tell them what your situation is for free.
Mm-hmm.
They'll tell you what your options are, and then you can make a decision going forward from there.
But if you can get the same RAID card, or use the same RAID card if it's still good,
mm-hmm.
it's possible that you could take another computer with a functional operating hard, you know, OS hard drive of its own, put that RAID card in it, configure it, get it up and working, and if those drives are still good, then those drives should show up on that system, and then you could pull the data off it. Yeah, the same as if you were slaving a drive on a system.
Okay, when you say RAID card specifically, what hardware are you talking about?
Do you have onboard RAID or is it a RAID card?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I was under the impression it might be onboard.
If it's onboard RAID, then you
would... if the RAID controller is a part of the motherboard or if it's an expansion card?
I do not know.
You can look inside the computer and determine that if it's a card, if it's an expansion card that's plugged into one of the expansion slots, then there's a possibility you could take that card and lock, stock, and barrel and the drives out and put them into another computer that already has a hard drive on it with an operating system installed, and that system... Once you get that RAID configured, might see your RAID as a secondary drive.
That should work. If the drives are good and as large as the OS that you're plugging that RAID card into is supported by the company that made the card, it should just slide up. But I'm guessing that it's probably on board.
Or,
that's been a big thing.
But even if it's on board, if you could find what kind of RAID it is, like Promise is a really common one that they put on board. If you can find the type and the version... Then if you could find another board with that same type and version, mm-hmm. you could get another disk, install the OS on it, and then put those on there and use it as the data drives on a new motherboard.
It's pretty involved, so if...
it's not real basic stuff.
No, it's not super easy or anything. So those are some things you can try. If you want to go to OnTrack, they will recover the data. It will just cost you real money to do so.
Right.
You can also try talking to the folks over at the computer hospital. I hate to keep mentioning the same people over and over again, but they might have something up their sleeve. If they're likely to refer you on to some place like OnTrack, but start with a computer tech. Or, hire a local tech. I mean, certainly not a Best Buy tech. Almost certainly not going to be a Geek Squad situation. Go to somebody who's got real hardcore tech, so maybe the computer hospital might be a place to start.
Okay. Well, guys, thank you very much. If I ever get it fixed or the situation resolved, I'll call back and let you know.
If you ever get your stuff published and get rich, you can make a donation.
Okay. Sounds cool.
Thanks.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. 20 minutes left in the program. 713-526-5738 is the number to call. Got a few calls in the queue, though. Who's up next, Groovehouse?
Let's see. We'll take...
Let's see.
Let's see.
How am I feeling today?
Whoever shall it be?
It shall be Bill.
It is Bill. Hi, Bill.
Hey, y'all. Hey, could I make a request, please?
Sure.
Oh, I wanted to hear Jay sing again.
The Flying Fish Sailors are playing again.
I don't have any shows on the books. I think he just wants to be here spontaneously yodel.
That was good, though.
Well, thanks. I can't do it on command. It's just one of those things that has to happen spontaneously.
Okay, I'll let you go.
So what can we do for you, Bill? You didn't really have a question?
You're not going to sing. I'm going to hang up. That's all.
That was really it. No. Let's see here. I was wondering if you guys had any recommendations. I know y'all aren't video editors per se, as far as I know, but I was looking at getting a new Mac with Final Cut Studio, and I was going to get an Adobe Creative Suite, like Web Premium, or I was thinking about the Master Collection, maybe. I was wondering what y'all thought of, like, the production suite of Adobe, like Premiere Pro.
Adobe Premiere is the premier video editing software suite, and the price reflects that. But it's from everything I've heard from anybody who does pro video editing, that is the software to use.
Is this on a Windows or a Mac?
Mac,
system?
He says.
There's also Final Cut Pro.
Final Cut Pro?
Final Cut Pro is, it's kind of a religious war between the two of them. I think most diehard Mac users would say it's Final Cut Pro.
Really?
Yeah. That's what we use for our video at the Chronicle.
Equally expensive.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, okay, so... Kind of a preference there, I guess.
What about, is there like on the iMac something called iVideo? Or
iMovie.
iMovie.
Which is really low end.
Yeah.
But it is free.
But it's free, and if you want to do some basic stuff, right. It's good for that.
Yeah. I've used iMovie, and I've got Final Cut Pro, and I was thinking about upgrading everything. I was just wondering if y'all knew of
anything Premiere had over Final Cut, or
I would expect that you could do a Google search on one versus the other, put in, you know,
there's a lot of comparison.
Premiere versus the other one, and you'll get website after website that compares them feature for feature and tells you what the pros and cons of each are.
What is that one that I don't know if they make it for Mac? The Vegas video? Is it?
Yeah, Sony Vegas.
Is it still around? Oh, yeah, that's right, Sony Buy. It used to be, what was it? Sonic Foundry, I think, was who
uh-huh.
originally made that.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if they make that for the Mac or not. I know some people, I knew some people that used to use that.
Yeah.
But I think it's cheaper, or it was cheaper, but I don't know about the functionality, though.
Okay. Yeah, you know, we're talking about RAIDs, and I was checking some stuff out. I'm thinking of doing that to a RAID 1. And a guy at Apple told me that RAID 1 writes it at the same time to both drives. That's what y'all were saying too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's correct. Because RAID 1 is a mirror, so it writes the same thing to each drive.
But the plus of that is if one of the drives die, you've got an exact mirror copy of it just kind of standing by.
But it can also read faster because it reads from mm-hmm. both of them at the same time, alternate.
Okay. Well, he was saying, too, that it doesn't really... I thought it was going to slow down the process because it had to write twice, but he was saying it doesn't really slow down much because it's...
Here's the deal. It's writing twice at the same time. So if you, like, go really medieval, and if you had, like, a scribe that took a long time to, like, you write out a book, it took, like, him a day, and you had two scribes, the way that you could do it is you could read, you know, the same paragraph passage, and in one RAID configuration, both scribes write down the exact same thing. So it takes the same amount of time as one scribe writing, but you've got an exact copy of it, okay? And the other way to speed it up is you can have one scribe write the first half of the paragraph and the other scribe write the second half, but what really happens is every other word. So what you do is you write it in half the total time because you've got them both going. But if you lose either work from that scribe, you lose the whole thing because both pieces depend on each other. And then all the other RAID configures are a mixturation of that. So it all comes down to, do you want to split it across two scribes? Do you want to have both scribes copy the same thing? Or do you want to, like, add some complexity and have a mix of those?
Okay, I'm not real clear what you're saying on RAID 1.
Oh, well, I thought I was going to go medieval, but no.
But you're saying RAID 1, I don't understand what you're saying where half goes to one, half goes to the other. I mean, if it's a mirror, how can you...
He had switched to RAID 0.
I'm sorry, yeah, we switched. That's the main difference. One of them is that half the data goes to one drive and half to the other drive at the same time. So you're going at twice the speed. And same thing back. And the other one is you're putting the same data on both drives, so it's going there at the same speed. But when you read it back, it comes back faster because two people can read back instead of just one.
Oh, I see what you're doing. Oh, okay. Okay, well, that sounds good.
I will tell you this. We had this conversation before, and for the average home user, RAID makes no sense. Generally speaking, it was a good idea at one point to expand the size of your drives. If you want to have more drive space, you could RAID a number of smaller drives together to make one large drive. But really where RAID comes in handy is like at the server level, when you're talking about having servers that you cannot afford to have downtime, you have the RAID set up so you've got hot swappable hard drives. If one drive fails, it just goes over to the other drive.
And with RAID size it's really not that. The performance value now is going to be if you need really fast read performance.
Right.
Because you can split the data across a bunch of spindles or separate hard drives, so you can read a whole lot of data faster.
The level of complexity and the points of failure do not tend to make it worthwhile. I never hear from anybody who calls in and says, you know, I've got a RAID system and it's working flawlessly, and
that's
because
nobody thinks about it while it's working.
But when it dies, I've heard so many horror stories.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. When it goes bad, I mean, I don't even claim to fully understand. I mean, Barrett's description he just gave just now was the best description of RAID I've ever heard in my life. So I feel like I got a handle on it now, but even with that new information and understanding, I wouldn't deploy it at least at the desktop.
We don't have it on anything lower than like a really high-end server, like a high availability server.
Right.
So it's not the admin, and the price just doesn't really get it in there.
I was thinking, I talked to Apple, and he said, you know, the Macs come able without a card to do RAID 0 and 1.
Yep.
I do RAID 1, but mainly it's like if I'm doing video and I don't want to lose it, and you know, I'm going to have to back up the drive anyway, right?
Right. I mean, RAID 1 can be made simple enough that it's not too bad.
That's
and
the mirror version?
Yeah, that's
yeah,
the mirror.
Yeah, the mirror version is the only one that makes sense at the desktop.
It's like having a backup being
a
automatically
backup.
Made all the time.
Yeah.
So you're basically just doing everything twice, and if one fails, you have the other.
Yeah, so have you heard horror stories about RAID 1 like that?
Not as many. Mm-hmm.
The only time I've really heard horror stories about RAID in that kind of situation is when the RAID controller itself goes bad.
And the data's corrupted
on both
drives.
And it spews data across... It spews corruption across both drives.
Aye.
Which does happen.
So you end up with two corrupted drives.
Yeah, if you consider it your backup, that's fine until the RAID controller... Either it messes up and spews garbage across the drives, or something happens that your system thinks it's writing good data, but it's writing garbage, and your RAID card just says, okay, I'm writing it to both of them, and it writes garbage to both of them, in which case it doesn't matter that you have two, because you have two with the same garbage.
Oh, okay. So
all right. Well, listen, we got to move on. We got to have to take some of the calls. But
thanks a lot, guys.
Appreciate your call tonight. Thank you.
Okay, take care.
All right. All right, on IRC, Adam's Apple wants us to tell Dwight that thanks for damning him to spending over an hour researching all the tech data for an old phone I had to enter it into Gidget.com.
You're more than welcome.
All right, who's up next, Groove House?
Up next, we've got Jeff.
Jeff, you're on the air.
Hey. I've got kind of a simple question in comparison to that guy.
Yay, simple question.
okay. I bought a computer that was, you know, brand new. It should have been working fine from day one. But since the day I brought it home with Vista, it's like I can't even open a Word document and the internet at the same time. Freezes up.
Okay, so if that's the case and it's done that since day one and you haven't even had a chance to, like, really modify the software or do anything to it, I would be getting that serviced under warranty as soon as possible.
Yeah.
That's telling me that there's more than likely a hardware issue.
Well, I took it to this this little Korean mom-and-pop shop.
Where did you buy the computer from?
I bought it straight from Dell Online.
Why aren't you on the phone? How old is the computer now?
It's a good 2 or 3 years old.
All right, so you're well past your warranty and stuff, I see.
Yeah, but this company or little business, I can't even call it a company, this little Korean mom and pop shop took a look at it and they seemed to know what they were talking about.
Okay.
And they were talking about getting in there with the hardware, and I was a little bit nervous because the laptop, I know the hardware is more sensitive.
Yeah.
Anyway, I left it with them overnight and they charged me like $200, increased the RAM, I got an external hard drive for it.
Oh, Lord.
But I brought it home. Yeah, they convinced me, and I found out later that's all pretty much just useless or superfluous.
Right.
And I opened up the computer when I got home. When I got home, and I tried to navigate and everything, and it was working a little bit faster. But I had this little, like, red icon that was, like, in the corner of the screen. You know?
Decepticon.
No? Okay.
Red icon in the corner. Got it. We need to kind of move this forward a little bit because we're running out of time.
Sorry, I just didn't know if you heard about this, but I found this little red icon, and it was like, it started with a D and a G, and I was just like, what is this?
Ah, it's the Decepticons.
No.
No, it's a Transformer.
It's a Transformer.
Is Optimus Prime in laptop form?
Yeah. Nice.
Next call.
Why were I saw you gesturing? This is it. This is the one.
This is the one. The mom and pop Korean
repair place.
I'm glad when this movie's gone.
Yeah. All right, who's up next?
It's coming out in DVD pretty soon.
It's coming soon to a laptop near you.
Up next, we've got John.
John, you're on the air. John.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Yeah, thanks for the description on RAID. That was also a very good one for me, too.
All right.
I'll move quickly because I know you don't have much time.
Yeah.
I'll give you a quick background. My desktop died, and as an educational program, I talked my 15-year-old into building a computer. It wasn't hard for him to agree to that.
Not if Pop's footing the bill.
Uh-oh.
Hello, John? John?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
We can hear you now.
Okay, sorry about that. Anyways, my son and I built a computer as a replacement, and he built it to his gaming spec, and it's running now. We kind of stumbled through it because I've never done it before myself. But the question is boot order. We've got two hard drives. We took the old one and put it in along with a new hard drive.
John, you faded out again. John, you faded out again. He's gone. All right, we're going to have to let you go. It's just not working. You can certainly send the question to us via the website. Who's up next, Screwhouse?
Up next in the speed round, we've
Decepticon.
Got... Decepticon. Decepticon. We've got Paul.
Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you guys? Real quick one. Computer picked up this virus called System Security, and it's... that's the name of the virus.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, kind of done a little bit of playing around with it. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it and how much work I have ahead of me. It's on a secondary computer. I'm wondering if I should fight through it or if I should do something like a system restore.
Are you sure it's a virus? I've not heard of it before, but is it presenting itself? Is it coming up and saying that it's system security, or is it being detected by your antivirus?
No, it's coming up and saying it's a virus.
All right, it's probably the fake. It's fake anti-spyware.
Yep.
What I would recommend that you do is use a program called Malwarebytes anti-malware.
Okay.
I have it listed on geekradio.com under the spyware link. It's a free. They have a free version. You want to be very careful and very specific and go get the free version. It is going to be your best candidate for getting rid of this. And if it does not successfully get rid of it, you may want to consider backing up your data and formatting your drive.
Okay.
But Malwarebytes does a pretty good job, and I've had it get rid of this kind of software infection. But these things come out, the new ones come out, and it can get very hard to get rid of.
It's not really letting me access the net or, you know, take it out of even doing simple.
You can download it onto another computer and install it onto this computer to kind of bypass that. But
okay. It
might be worth a shot.
All right, and that's geekradio.com.
If you go to geekradio.com, click on the spyware link. I list about four tools for removing spyware, but the first one I talk about is Malwarebytes, and it's been really successful for me to get rid of some of the stuff.
And if that doesn't cure it, then what's step two for me?
Step two, if that doesn't cure it, if you can't get it to respond the way you want to, back up your data, format the drive, and reload it.
All right, got it.
All right?
All right, appreciate it.
Sure thing.
Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, have not had this conversation in a long time, but it does boil down to how much time do you want to spend on it. And once you get infected, sometimes it's just too tough to clean up. Real quick, pop Fred onto the line. Fred, I'm sorry we don't have much time, but real quick.
Just a quick question. If I have a server-type machine and a couple of desktops, and I want to use them as a network, so the server is a database server, and the other two desktops are just clients, do I need to buy some special software or hardware, or just use Windows networking and get them connected together like that?
I would just use Windows networking, built-in networking stuff to get that going.
Great,
and just share files back and forth.
Thank you very much.
All right, good luck to you, sir. Thanks. All right. Yay. You've been listening to Technology Bites here on KPFT Houston, you lucky dogs.
No geek gathering.
No geek gathering this Friday, but you can go hang out wherever and be geeky if you like.
Decepticon.
And, yeah. I will say that those last several Transformer prank calls have been the best. Prank calls. I mean, you know, we used to get these prank calls that were just like so lame because they would say something, and they would go, "F you," or whatever. So just these have been, the build-ups have been really good.
It's almost as good as the Bloody Hook.
I got suckered.
Probably better than the movie.
Yeah. I wonder if that's actually... All right, well, anyway, stick around for Partisan Gridlock coming your way at 10 o'clock. We'll be back next Wednesday night for more Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Plicted.
He's Barrett.
Sorry, I took off the phone. One of them's dead. I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight. And
I'm a Decepticon.
It's election season at KPFT. Nominations are now open for the KPFT Local Station Board, with voting beginning in late August. You may only vote with an official ballot that KPFT will mail to members who are current as of July 15th. If you're already a member, please make sure your mailing information is up to date. If you're not currently a member but you would like to vote, you will need to join by July 15th. Likewise, if you're a KPFT volunteer, please confirm your contact information for the upcoming elections. For membership, please call 713-526-4000, extension 314, during regular office hours, or send an email with your name, address, and phone number to membership@kpft.org. For volunteers, please call 713-526-4000, extension 316, during regular office hours, or send an email with your name, address, and phone number to volunteer@kpft.org. Complete election, membership, and volunteer information is available at kpft.org. This is KPFT Houston.
Studies have shown that this pleasing voice bores a hole between one's ears suitable for filling with just about anything the voice wants you to hear. Fossil fuels are green. Greed is good. The liberal voice is evil, has bad breath, and prefers not to change its underwear. The endless parade of tireless volunteers at KPFT talk funny, look weird, and think too much. Odd attire is worn with disruptive slang, logos, and indiscreet holes. Nothing seems to rid the beloved building of these vile creatures, always looking for new ways to spread the ridiculous message of tolerance, compassion, equality, and justice. KPFTauction.org. Stay away from it. It might give you hope or encourage you to think there are others like you. Saturday evening, July 18th. Don't be seen with the misguided listeners.